Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is side one of For the Record program number 516, interview with Daniel Hopsicker about the Venice, Florida cover-up. And once again, this has been recorded on June 26th of the year 2005. Once again, it is my pleasure and privilege to be joined by the heroic Daniel Hopsicker, investigative reporter extraordinaire and resident of Venice, Florida. How you doing down there, Daniel?
Oh, dude, you made me laugh. Heroic Daniel Hopsicker.
Hey.
I'll take it.
Hey,
No,
you should take it. One of the things we're going to be talking about during the course of this, in fact, a nice chunk of this, are what I characterize as some elements of a low-level operation specifically directed at neutralizing your work down there in that area. And you know, you're not the focal point of a low-level operation, and maybe low-level is a mischaracterization, unless you've done something significant. So it wears well, and assume the mantle, because I tell you, you know, you're not going to be hearing things like that from, say, the Sarasota Herald Tribune.
Well, thank you.
Okay. Daniel, you are working on something that I have not yet seen. We're going to talk about a couple of articles, specifically the second Mohammed, unquote, of Venice, and also a fascinating story you've done about the casino boats in Florida and some of their links to the Christian right, the GOP around George Bush, and a place that was one of the recreational selections made by Mohammed Atta and company as well. But you have been talking about Sam the Sham Kuchel Fahani, and apparently some of the things you've been shaking out of the tree are definitely beginning to upset some people on the West Coast. Tell us about that.
Yeah, you know, you were talking about digging stuff up and having what you dug up be worthy enough to afford a low level disinformation campaign, for example, to take place. But there's a variety of ways that they use and. 2 weeks ago, an innocent American witness, that I quoted in the story, got a phone call at 4:30 in the morning, with a threat on his life from a voice he recognized as being Sam Kustafahani, who he hadn't seen in 5 years.
Interesting. That fellow's name was Joe Cicchese, am I right?
Right. Joe Cicchese. Well, first of all, Sam Kustafahani. Why is he of interest? He's of interest because he helps explain what was going on in San Diego, and what was going on in San Diego in re 9/11 was significant enough for the head of the Intelligence Committee investigation into 9/11 to point to it to say that's why we don't know the truth. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Sam was at the heart of what was going on in San Diego, as evidenced by his conviction in federal court in, I think it was 97, 98, he was convicted of running a ring, a network, used to infiltrate Middle Eastern men, unnamed Middle Eastern men, several hundred unnamed Middle Eastern men, into the U.S.
And
he got busted for running a network.
Yep, and
convicted on federal charges of fraud, but in, you know, in the court documents, it clearly illustrates that he had a half a dozen people working with him to get Middle Eastern men into the U.S. Illegally, with names that could not then be traced.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay, and he had one other bizarre distinction. Which is that he owned the house in the mansion in Rancho Santa Fe, California, where the 39 or 40 Heaven's Gate cultists killed themselves in 1997, March of 1997.
One of the things that you've done in your articles, Daniel, is to trace that milieu outward, and there is a series of bogus universities, appearing basically to be fronts of some kind, that not only embrace the milieu of Mr. Kuchesfahani, but also another San Diego area operator operating under the name of Abu Sadr Sheikh, not his real name.
Right.
And this directly overlaps some of the people who are some of the San Diego area hijackers. And in turn, the larger university milieu overlaps people like John Gray and some of the people involved with the 911 BS movement.
But totally. When you look at it, it explains a lot. And you can see it in other realms. Kustafahani got a bogus PhD in psychology from a non-existent university, and then used it to attempt to gain work with the state of California. Abu Sattar Sheikh, the person so of interest that the FBI would not deliver the congressional subpoena on him to appear before the Intelligence Committee hearings into 9/11, was titled in every news article a retired professor. In when they got specific in some articles, it was a retired professor of English at San Diego State. Well, he's not a retired professor. He's not even a professor. He never taught at San Diego State.
And his name isn't Abu Sattar Sheikh.
And this is the person that Senator Bob Graham, the chairman of the Senate, House, I don't know if it was a joint House-Senate, but it was the Senate Intelligence Committee, 9/11 investigation, said was the key to understanding 9/11. And so, you know, it's all wrong. I mean, it's all a front. It's just a legend.
Mm-hmm.
But the interesting thing is how they use, I mean, these people make up institutions in their mind, and then force, you know, and the newspapers and the government, you know, treat them as if they were who they say they were.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, we should not fail to note in this context that certainly Mr. quote Abu Sattar Sheikh and I believe also Mr. Kuches Fahani were FBI informants as well.
Oh, well, but see, and that's the thing about Sam. But before I get to that, the similarity was glaring to what I saw Thursday on TV. Senator John Warner was holding hearings on the tribal gambling scandal going on. The tribal gambling scandal that's behind the scandal going on around Tom DeLay and Jack Abramoff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they called this man to testify because he was the head of a foundation. I forget the name. Any name would do. American Presidential Foundation. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Which supposedly was a think tank doing research into blah blah blah. And these guys, these Republicans, this Republican lobbyist and his associate had run millions of dollars through this non-existent foundation, or, you know, run by a lifeguard in Delaware.
We're going to be talking about Jack Abramoff and the tangle of individuals and institutions surrounding him, which also will overlap some of Mohammed Atta's recreational activities. Dan, you have penned a couple of more of your incisive investigative series, and I'd like to update listeners on some of the things that you've been talking about. First of all, the second Mohammed of Venice, a new Mohammed, allegedly the Mohammed that people were mistaking for Atta, has cropped up. I wonder if you could perhaps tell us about whom we might, for lack of a better term, call the second Moor of Venice.
Well, after this happened the second week after 9/11, or the third week, a reporter at the Sarasota Herald Tribune had done several interviews with Mohammed Atta's American girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
She had also been named by several other local newspapers. Then the FBI stepped in and put the kibosh on that. The reporter that had done the original stories were taken off it. Another reporter was put on who harassed Mohammed Atta's ex-girlfriend to the point where she called the FBI. And the story that they put out then, which she complied with because they had intimidated her into doing it, was that it really hadn't been Mohammed Atta she had lived with. It had been another Mohammed, a second Mohammed. And this second Mohammed they didn't know what his real name was. They didn't know what his real nationality was. They didn't know what his connection with Atta was, except he had one. He had disappeared right after 9/11. They didn't know anything about him, really, except that he was the Mohammed Atta that had lived with Mohammed Atta's girlfriend. Okay? He was the second Mohammed. So the guy surfaced, sent me an email. He's French and Moroccan. He used one of Mohammed Atta's aliases, Mohammed Arajaki, sent me several emails filled with stuff that you could have gleaned from my articles, none of which was original, and, you know, claiming to have lived with Amanda Keller, and then sent a couple of pictures of himself. Well, I mean, Mohammed Atta was 5'7", dark, slight, This guy's 6'2". I mean, it's a weak stretch, man. It's you know, I printed this picture in a story on my site because it's unmistakable that this could not that no one would mistake this man for Muhammad Atta.
By the way, they not only don't look alike, but I showed this to a colleague who commented that the person, he's of French Moroccan extraction. He looks more French than Moroccan, and he definitely does not. He quite obviously is not Muhammad Atta, and could not have been mistaken for him.
Well, you know, there's a French aspect to this operation, and I've been told. The chief instructor at Huffman Aviation, while Atta was there, was a man who's received no publicity so far. And he's French.
Well, indeed, one thing that is true, when Tony Blair described the 9/11 hijackers as part of a global network, he said the proverbial mouthful, and we have all kinds of people, French, not only people from all over the Middle East, but Germans, Swiss, Austrians, French, not to mention a great many people from the USA involved with some of the tributaries coming out of the Iran-Contra drug trafficking networks. But let's go back to the second Mohammed, as I call him, the second Moor of Venice here. By the way, Venice, that obviously being a play on The Merchant of Venice by Shakespeare. This is Venice, Florida we're talking about. He claims that the confusion was generated by Amanda Keller's desire for publicity. Go ahead.
Yeah,
address that, if you would.
When exactly the opposite was the case. I mean, it took me 6 months to track her down.
Right.
And then the only reason, you know, and then 2 days to convince her to talk to me. I mean, she was scared. She was a young kid. She had Muhammad Atta not flown the plane, you know, driven a plane into the World Trade Center. She would have never given him another thought. He was not even a PS in her life.
Mm-hmm.
Until September 11th. And then, everything that happened after that was negative. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The FBI intimidated not only her but everyone else that saw her with him, and things were not pleasant. And she left town, and it took me 3 months to track her down. They might have taken the National Enquirer 5 or 6 days, but you know, I mean, it took a lot of work to find where she had hidden herself. And by the way, I had to tell her I wouldn't reveal where it was.
Mm-hmm. This point.
So
yeah.
There was nothing. No, publicity was the last thing she wanted or wants now. I mean, as she told me, I mean, who wants to be known as the girlfriend of a terrorist?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, there was no. I mean, that was the last thing. That again is what these people do. They level accusations with no basis in fact, and then go on to like their next accusation with no basis in fact. So this guy was bogus, and obviously illustrative of an organized operation, because I received email at the same time from Sabrina Hupfeld, another one of Amanda and Atta's party associates,
mm-hmm.
Saying exactly the same thing. But once this guy had sent me the picture, I mean, you look at the picture and it's not Atta. There's no way you mistake this guy for Atta. So, I mean, how stupid do they think we are?
Well, that's an interesting question in and of itself. So let's table that perhaps for an entire discussion in and of itself. But one of the points that you make in your landmark text, Welcome to Terrorland, Muhammad Atta and the 9/11 Cover-Up in Florida, which I emphatically encourage listeners to get and read, Amanda Keller was but one of a number of people in the Venice, Florida area who knew of Muhammad Atta and company's activities and was flat out scared to talk about it. They feared for their lives and or the lives of their family if they were too loquacious.
Absolutely. I mean, and it wasn't just, it was Amanda Keller, it was the people around her, but it wasn't just the little people, it was sheriffs of surrounding counties.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It became clear the more people I met like this, I mean, I was just looking for people that knew Atta, right? You know, what can you tell me about them? And the further I got into it, the more it became clear to me that the FBI had already been everywhere. Every discovery I made, the FBI had been there, you know, 6 months earlier. But the effect of their having been there was never positive. I mean, none of the startling information that was available there had been relayed to the American public. And In almost every case, the witness had been strongly discouraged from talking to anybody about what had happened and what she'd seen. It was almost like the men in black had come through town.
And now, well, what we're seeing here is obviously an attempt at distracting from the truth. Again, I refer listeners to the picture that accompanies the Daniel Hopsicker story at www.madcowprod.com about this, quote, second, unquote, Muhammad. And again, as a colleague noted viewing the picture, he looks far more French than he does Arab. One very quick comment, Daniel. The second Muhammad said that it would be easy to confuse him because, quote, all Arab men look alike, unquote. And you opined that you were really glad you didn't make that statement in your article.
Yeah. Hard to understand. Well, I mean, but an associate of theirs is suing me now, too. Mm-hmm. Another of the German associates of Muhammad Atta, a man by the name of Stefan Verharen, is suing me, claiming that apparently I was inaccurate in my statements about him in the book and about his association with Muhammad Atta. So we shall see about whether I made any inexact statements about him. But this is, I think, perhaps the most sensitive area of questioning. I mean, if it became known that Atta's associates in Florida were might just as well have been European as Arab, you know. But there's no chance that anything like that's going to come out anytime soon, is there?
Well, it actually has come out, Daniel, and it's come out in your writings, in your book, in your articles.
It has to come out in a way that affects the public dialogue. I don't think they're particularly, you know, concerned or upset that I'm able to bring things forward. And things come out, as long as it doesn't come out in a way that enters or ruffles or affects the public dialogue.
Well, you know, obviously, with the nuisance lawsuits being directed at you, with the low-level disinformation operation with the second Muhammad, it's obvious that your work has drawn some attention, at least is drawing a certain amount of flack. In terms of investigating some of the European links, you point out that in Welcome to Terrorland and also in some of your articles that Muhammad Atta was traveling around under the auspices of the Karl Duisberg Gesellschaft, and then in one of our previous interviews you mentioned that, according to the BKA, the German Federal Police, some of Atta's associates were the sons and daughters of prominent German industrialists. And this has taken us very far afield.
Why I like talking to you, Dave, is because you know how to pronounce something you know how to pronounce Karl Duisberg.
Karl Duisberg, yep. He was one of the primary movers behind the old IG Farben chemical cartel. And he's a very interesting fellow.
And that's that foundation in Germany existed to administer a joint U.S. Congress German Bundestag program of student exchange.
It certainly did, and veterans.
Otto was a member, and then benefited from that program.
And there are other people under similar fellowships, the Robert Bosch Fellowship, the Alpha Fellowship, who also overlap a larger milieu that I've spoken about, not necessarily in conjunction with your work, but again, to veteran listeners to my show, hearing Daniel's incisive investigations and the word from the BKA, the German Federal Police, their equivalent to the FBI, that some of Atta's associates were sons and daughters of prominent German industrialists will ring a significant bell for the sharper listeners. Another aspect, Daniel, of the evident cover-up that is taking place in your area about the true activities of Muhammad Atta, you mentioned that a very, very prominent database used by journalists all over the world is being purged of the actual printed accounts.
Well, you can't find any of the Sarasota Herald Tribune stories naming Amanda Keller as Muhammad Atta's girlfriend, but you can, strangely enough, find this story refuting the earlier stories. When I spoke to someone at LexisNexis, he could neither confirm nor deny that those particular stories had been pulled, but gave me to understand that the fact that he could neither confirm nor deny, you know, meant just what I said it meant, just what I suspected it meant. The stories were pulled.
Yeah. Yeah, well, no, I mean, it's very obvious. Again, I'm repeating myself to a certain extent, but you've obviously moved the landscape to a certain extent down there. And we wouldn't be seeing, you know, the nuisance lawsuits from Hare Verharen, the purging of the LexisNexis articles, this BS second Muhammad with his preposterous stories, and a fellow who looks nothing like Muhammad Atta. And it's obvious that there is a significant effort down there to generate a smokescreen in order to cover up what actually was going on. And among the things, too, by the way, among the things that were going on was the fact that Muhammad Atta, in addition to his involvement, as you point out, and welcome to Terrorland, with Rudy Deckers, Wally Hilliard, and the aviation front's attendant on the Iran-Contra drug networks that we saw in connection with the work of various people, notably Gary Webb. One of the things you point out is that Muhammad Atta and his associates had some interesting tastes in recreation. I wonder if you'd briefly sum that up for us.
Well, you're talking about the Jack Abraham casino boats.
Among other things. I mean, the sex and the drugs and the rock and rolls and the Jack Abramoff casino boats.
But that's what struck me most recently, okay?
Right.
There was a loose thread. There were many loose threads, but one of the loose threads in my investigation into Atta and his associates concerned a key associate, a key associate of Muhammad Atta's, named Makram Chams. Makram Chams owned the convenience store where the terrorists hung out. He rented an apartment across the street from which they took numerous trips to the Orlando airport to pick up Saudi dignitaries in at least several cases. Okay?
This was the casino guy of Lebanese extraction that you write
correct,
about?
Correct.
Okay, I've never heard his name pronounced. Go ahead.
Makram Chams disappeared September 11th, and his convenience store sits abandoned the way it did September 12th. And no one has ever explained who Makram Chams was, although he still has family in the area and may well still be here, which is illustrative of the networks clearly that were left in place. But the most interesting thing I found about Makram Chams, you would think, okay, this guy's an Arab operative, and if he's still here, who knows why, but he was sent to smooth the terrorist progress, clearly.
Mm-hmm.
That was his activity, that's what he did. But 5 years earlier, four years earlier, in 1997, he was a partner, I had discovered, in a gambling boat, which sat here in Venice for 2 years, despite the city, county and state's efforts to get them out.
This was not in your article. So this guy was actually a partner in one of these cruises to nowhere, as you described them.
Oh, yeah. He was a partner in the Vegas to Benz. That's how I got interested in casino boats in the first place. He was a partner in a gambling boat called Vegas to Venice that sat in Venice for 2 years, completely unregulated. Okay?
Uh-huh.
I mean, in Florida, if you're an ex-felon, you can't vote. But you can own gambling ships, and you don't have to worry about background checks. Do you know why you don't have to worry about background checks? There are none.
Yeah. Well, that certainly smooths that out very effectively. Danny, we have just a few minutes on this side. One of the points you make, you've written extensively about Muhammad Atta and noted that he had some interesting recreational tastes. He liked to drink, he liked to do drugs, all kinds of stuff. But you mention in the article that you had, is sort of the lead article on your website now, that on September 5th, 2001, Muhammad Atta and apparently some associates took a trip to a casino boat, a gambling boat owned by a company named Sun Cruise. Tell us about that, if you would.
Well, I only discovered that after news accounts. I mean, the Jack Abramoff, Tom DeLay scandal has been going on in the background for a few months now and you know, slowly getting larger. And I asked, you know, when I looked into who he was, I discovered he had owned casino boats. He had owned 20 casino boats is what that Sun Cruise line had. I mean, they had half the fleet.
And this we're talking about Abramoff.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Exactly. And so I thought, well, how curious that Makram Chams owned a casino boat and helped Atta, and Jack Abramoff is stepping in and buying, you know, the lion's share of them. And that led me to the Associated Press report, which I admit I had missed, on September 26, 2001, that some of the terrorists, likely including Atta, had been caught on the security cameras of a casino boat, of a Sun Cruise casino boat.
By the way, Sun Cruise is spelled capital S-U-N, capital C-R-U-Z, one word. And Abramoff is one of the principal people on that. Daniel, we're down to the last couple of minutes of this side. Why don't we, briefly, can you give us just a brief summary of the history of the
cruise?
Well,
what does it mean? Here's the brief summary, okay?
Uh-huh.
As I explore the world of Mohammed Atta,
right,
I encounter all of the accoutrements of international organized crime.
Mm-hmm.
Gambling, money laundering.
Drugs.
Strippers, for that matter. And cocaine.
Major drug running, yep.
Drug trafficking.
Mm-hmm.
So you put that together with Tony Blair's statement about the terrorists receiving help from a global network, and you put that together with Sybil Edmonds, the FBI whistleblower, former translator in Washington, D.C., who saw the whole thing from another angle and says she translated documents in 2002 showing that the State Department was protecting a drug trafficking network that was associated with the 9/11 terrorists.
Yep.
And continuing to.
I want to refer listeners to, there was a great book that came out even before September 11th called Dollars for Terror by Richard LaBeviere, which points out the profound link between Islamic fundamentalists and a number of elements, including global organized crime. Danny, we are almost out of time on this side. We're going to continue this fascinating tale and story of your investigation inside, too. Briefly, tell us about your website, where people can get your books, Barry and the Boys, Welcome to Terrorland, and your wealth of articles and videos.
We do the Mad Cow Morning News at madcowprod.com.
Mm-hmm.
Just type in Mad Cow Morning News. Somebody told me that they wondered where I was going with the Mad Cow business early on, like 5 years ago. Okay, but could see it now. You know, I mean, because you've got to be a little off your rocker to be looking into things you shouldn't be.
Yep. Yep, and indeed, I think one could say perhaps that you are asking that profound question, where is the beef? And there's a few of them in the world of Mohammed Atta and the fascinating series of associations that he's kept. Again, www.madcowprod.com, articles, videos, DVDs, and in particular, two landmark texts, Welcome to Terrorland, Mohammed Atta and the 9/11 cover-up in Florida, and Barry and the Boys, about Barry about Barry Seal and his many, many connections. Don't forget also, Spitfire, www.spitfirelist.com, a wealth, again, of printed material. The two websites maintained by sister station WFMU, which are the entire For the Record series available online, at www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery. WFMU is now podcasting For the Record. And a note for people that have asked me where I thought things were going in the future, there are now two lectures about my prognostications about the future that are available for download for free on MP3 on the Spitfire website. Daniel, we're going to continue this discussion inside two of this broadcast. We have been visiting with Daniel Hopsicker and talking about an evident cover-up of some of the things he's been investigating in South Florida and a fascinating link between the widening gambling scandals surrounding Jack Abramoff and other people in the Republican and Christian right and Mohammed Atta and the underbelly of what was going on down there in Florida. We'll be continuing with that analysis inside two. For Daniel Hopsicker, this is Dave Emery saying, thanks for listening. This concludes Side 1 of For the Record, program number 516, being recorded on June 26th of the year 2005.